Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Wolves Fancast. Richard Hobbs here. We're doing things slightly differently today to preview the Liverpool game happening on Sunday. I'm joined by Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Neil, how are you?
I'm very well indeed. How are you?
I'm good, cheers. I'm good. This is a bit of a turn of tables for us because I've come on the Anfield Wrap sort of quite a few times over the past sort of few years since Wolves are doing all right, and this is the first time I've sort of got to play host with yourself.
No, it's more than allowed, and you know it's always excellent to get supporters of other teams on because I think that we, you know, obviously a league needs 20 teams, but finding out what other clubs do well or do badly or where they just sort of are mentally, I think is, you know, it really helps your understanding. It helps my enjoyment of the matches, to be quite honest with you, over weekend, Rich. I think that, you know, if you've got a real sense, even if you're not playing them directly, you know, if you've got a real sense of where Wolves are or what Southampton are up to, and then you watch the game, you can go, oh yeah, yeah, someone pointed out to me we had a weakness at right back or something like that, and it's quite nice.
Yeah, and I think sort of similarly, like, I always find it interesting to sort of see what, you know, viewers from the outside looking in on your club as well, because, you know, it's very easy to get caught in a bit of an echo chamber of your own club a lot of the time, and it's always fascinating to see, you know, particularly the players who can be a bit Marmite internally. Yeah. You know, however fans sort of see them.
Yeah, I think that's a positive. The other thing I always think, and one of the reasons why I do like keeping an eye on Wolves, is the thing I'm always looking for is the clubs who look like they're really enjoying themselves. And whether or not, you know, you've got where you're different fan cultures for different parts of the country, you know, for me, I think you'll struggle to find a supporter base that's really enjoyed itself across the last 4 or 5 years as much as Wolverhampton Wanderers. I love going to Molineux. I love the atmosphere at Molineux. Obviously, we've been helped with a couple of good results there in the league last couple of seasons, and it's worth saying that, but it felt like both of those wins last two seasons against Molineux felt like genuinely like slaying a dragon, like beating an end-of-level boss. And part of that was the atmosphere. They were night games. The weather was intense. Everything about them was intense. But also, the fact is that Wolverhampton Wanderers supporters are having a great time. I thought last season in the Europa League, I loved that Wolves took it deadly seriously and genuinely, and the supporters did as well. They didn't treat it as something that was inconvenient that got in the way of domestic football. It was firstly, how do we enjoy this as much as possible, getting to go to all these places? And then secondly, how do we win this competition? And in the end, that doesn't happen for Wolves, but you know, I think that it might have been a different story if there hadn't been the lockdown in there. It felt like to me like a side that was on the march to an extent in Europe, and all of that I just think reflects really well of the club and where it is at the minute, but also, you know, to the rest of the league. I think that Wolves are a bit of a model to follow for a lot of clubs in the country, and I think that the sheer enjoyment that they get game to game, as I say, both as a team, as a club, and also as a supporter base, I just think is marvellous.
Yeah, I think that the club have made sort of huge strides under a new ownership and a lot of that, and I've spoken with you before, you know, my sort of thoughts, you know, football's about creating memories. Yeah. It's, you know, it's great that Wolves finished seventh two seasons in a row, but, you know, apart from us, no one remembers the team who finishes seventh. You know, what fans will remember is the trips to Braga and Espanyol, and, you know, getting to a semi-final of the FA Cup and things like that. And all those little things Wolves seem to have really tried to maximise on in terms of those experiences. And you say sort of, it was when we were still in the Championship, I think, and the owners or the marketing team, they sort of set off fireworks and have the big fires as the players came out. Yeah. And when it first happened, you know, there was a bit of piss take about it. And it was a bit, you know, it's a, you know, a little bit big time for when you're not really there. But then as soon as we're in the Premier League and you're playing a night game against a high level caliber opposition, it doesn't half boost up the atmosphere and things like that. And makes it a real experience at that point. And, you know, me and a couple of the other guys from the Fancast, we sit on a fan experience working group for the club because they're really keen to actually sort of see, well, you know, how can we make sure we're doing things right for the fans? So, you know, they know there's backing from the owners, but they're crucially aware, as with probably most clubs, to be fair, there's some things that need to come from the club and there's some things that need to come from fans. So actually, this kind of means I can sort of do this sort of before it starts, there is currently a Just Giving page set up that is very much being fan-driven via this working group, to create a banner going all across the Steve Ball stand, sort of as a get well soon message for Raul Jimenez. It was set up last night. The target was for sort of £7,500 to get this banner sort of produced. It's currently on about £14,000.
Good God.
I think it's been live for what is about 14 hours now. It's really great that sort of first talk beforehand. Well, anything extra left over, we can just donate to charity, sort of whatever, either sort of one relating to Jimenez, or, you know, maybe like the Jeff Astor one in terms of sort of head trauma. And the fact that it's almost that the cost has almost been matched now is fantastic. And, you know, I'll make sure that I guess for Fancast listeners, that will be in the link in the description for this one, for this episode. I guess sort of moving on to Liverpool, it's been interesting from the outside looking in to Liverpool's start of the season, because you're joint top of the league on points at the moment. And apart from the Villa game, it's felt almost business as usual in terms of results. But there does feel like a different feeling around this Liverpool team this season. And an air of the invincibility that you had last season seems to have dissipated a little bit. How do you find sort of the season's gone?
Yeah, I think that's really fair. I think if you get beat 7-2, you got on primetime television, you're going to look a lot less invincible, and it's worth bearing that in mind. I think in general we've dropped you know, we've had a normal good start to the season. We won 26 out of the first 27 last season, and I still don't think in general the scope and scale of that achievement has been properly put into the context of English football history. You know, that's the best start any team's ever had in the modern era in a big five league in Europe. You know, no one had been better up to that point. No one had been better up to 25 games, up to 26, up to 27. And it's an astonishing thing that they did at that stage of the season last season. So obviously you're not going to be able to continue with that. And I think part of the challenge of this season, regardless really, was going to be managing the idea of, well, how do you challenge and hopefully win the title if you're just going to get 94 points and you're not going to get 99, or you're not going to be 26 wins out of 27. And that is, you know, that's sort of still where we are, and we're still trying to make sense of that. We've also had a really tough start. You mentioned Villa Park. We've also gone to Goodison. We've gone to Stamford Bridge. We've gone to the Etihad, and we've had games against Arsenal at home. We've got Wolves coming as well. We've had West Ham, which when you write the games down at the start of the season might not look that tough, but currently looks like a tough game. We've had Leeds. So what we haven't, you know, we of the sides who are likely to be around sort of 14th down, we've only played Brighton, and that was a difficult game. And I think we all think Brighton are a slightly better side than the league position suggests. And on top of that, we've had Sheffield United. We haven't had any of those other sides yet either. So we're all right. The flip side, though, has been the physical toll on the players between the Champions League games and the league games. I think in general, there was the possibility Liverpool might have had a bit of a physical dip this season under normal circumstances anyway, because they've been so primed for 2 or 3 years to play a certain level of intensity that you can't keep going to that well. But Liverpool are in the midst of a full-blown, and I mean a full-blown injury crisis, the sort that, you know, is the stuff of nightmares from a managerial point of view. So to be where we are is really, really good, but obviously it would only take 3-4 weeks of relatively poor results and the picture would look a lot worse. Whereas at this stage last season, when we were 8, 9, 10 points clear already, we'd have been able to say, well, if we have 3 or 4 bad results, we'll still be there or thereabouts.
Yeah, I think you're completely right in terms of, I guess, the fixes that you have and haven't played. And, you know, it reminds me of something that Alex Ferguson used to kind of go on about in terms of, you split up the table in half, work out roughly where people are going to finish, beat the bottom half, eat home and away. Because as soon as you've done that, they say that's 20 wins.
Yes, 60 points. Yep.
And if you've not actually played a huge amount of those teams, it gets difficult and you lose momentum. You know, look at teams like Sheffield United who just haven't got started this season. And, you know, the injury crisis, you're quite right. I mean, I say full-blown, you know, without star goalkeeper, star defender, your next sort of defender, your latest midfielder. And I find it interesting because it does draw a lot of parallels to when Klopp won the title at Dortmund. And, you know, the hell for leather, Gergen press style of football is great to watch, but there is probably a fairly direct correlation between that style of play and injuries. And to be fair, I say that knowing, you know, Van Dijk's injury had nothing to do with, you know, having to sort of, you know, run the extra 110%. But, you know, I can sort of see it very much mirrors Wolves, interestingly, that I've said sort of over the last few years that Wolves sports science team is probably one, you know, the best kept secret in the country. In fact, that we're playing so many games and had very few injuries. And then all of a sudden, we just had those couple of players. Bolly got a fractured fibula in training. Johnny's been out for 6 months now. Jimenez, again, it's sort of a completely sort of different scale, but there's been a sort of a lot more of those niggly injuries.
What I think does you in is it's more on what's done us in. So Van Dijk and Gomez are a really good example. Gomez gets injured on England duty, but we'd had to work him really hard. And the reason why we'd had to work him really hard was that there was an injury to Van Dijk. And then Matip doesn't recover from the Everton game either. So Gomez is our only senior centre-back at that point. Fabinho comes in and plays centre-back. In his third consecutive game playing centre-back, he pulls his hamstring. So now Gomez has to play every game. And then Gomez gets injured on England duty, pretty innocuously, supposedly on training. And one of the prop Milner last week, Milner plays his third game in a week. And the reason why was we needed Milner to play his third game in a week because we didn't have enough bodies. And this is one of the things that happens when you are embroiled in an injury crisis is the spiral that one leads to two, two leads to four, and four leads to six. And then suddenly you've got six and everyone's looking at one another. At the minute, Gini Wijnaldum's shattered. You know, last two games against Brighton and Ajax, you've been able to see it in his body language last 20 minutes because he's having to play every game. There's no moves for him and the games haven't stopped coming. So I think that it is those knock-on effects. And then on top of that, you've got the whole period where there was lockdown and players weren't able to train properly. And then the flip side of that was a really hugely curtailed pre-season. And Jurgen Klopp, since the day he's arrived at Liverpool, literally the day he's arrived, has talked about the importance of pre-season. And, you know, you've only got to look right the way across the league to see injuries are up for absolutely everybody. And then the next phase of that becomes the arguments around kickoff times, where there is a profound difference between 12:30 and even 3, and especially 5:30 or 7 or 8 on a Saturday, to do with the importance of sleep within recovery and rest, and just what feels like a small margin, according to the sports science experts, makes a difference. There was a good piece in The Athletic that detailed there are proportionally more injuries in the 12:30 kickoff, more muscle injuries in the 12:30 kickoff than the Premier League average, and that's going back across 2 years. So it has been difficult. It has been difficult, but it is worth saying Liverpool have qualified from the Champions League group top. They are sitting top of the Premier League at this stage. It's only a penalty shootout against Arsenal, which means we haven't got an EFL Cup game, which I suspect the manager's quite pleased about now. But that's the only reason why we haven't got an EFL Cup game coming up as well. We were the better side against Arsenal in the EFL Cup, and that went to penalties. So whilst the start hasn't been last season's, it's still been, you know, pretty good despite all the adversity.
Yeah, it's, I guess, in a way, it's sort of hard to knock a team and say being joint top after, you know, 10 games for most teams. You can't knock it, but say when you compare it to, say, winning pretty much every game possible for 6 months, it's hard to almost mentally justify it. And say, I say that as a Wolves fan, and, you know, we're not quite at the same position we were last season, but, you know, people say, well, it's not as good, or it's like, well, it's hard to hit that same level week in, week out. And, you know, with Liverpool, you're completely right on the kickoff times, especially playing in Europe and the extra travel and what that physically does. You know, I get knackered if I'm on a plane journey if I'm going to Europe and I've not spent an hour and a half running around the football pitch. But, you know, it's not even a question with recruitment with Liverpool. So, you know, to mirror Wolves, you know, when we've had a injury, not quite a crisis, so without Jimenez now for the foreseeable future, we only have one out and out striker who we signed in the summer, who's 18 years old, who has lots of potential. He did really well on against Arsenal, but what if he gets sent off? You know, we're left with Traore up front, and, you know, prior to that we would have had potentially Diogo Jota playing up front for us in sort of a false nine way, who, again, Liverpool seem to have sort of pulled it off again in terms of their recruitment strategy. I mean, I've marvelled at it for years in terms of the approach, and essentially, I wouldn't say acquiring a player in the worst position in the team, but you look at the Liverpool starting 11 from the outside looking in, and if again, 26 out of 27 wins, one of the highest record totals in the league last season, Champions League the year before that, you know, where do you strengthen? And it would probably be that Firmino position, I'd argue. And Jota's come in, and I love Jota. He is exactly what you want as a fan watching him in terms of what he gives on the pitch, and what he did for Wolves at least. But I'm amazed he's hit the ground running as well as he has done at Liverpool.
I think yeah, really has hit the ground running excellently. I think he's managed to cut. I think one of the things that you miss when you don't watch Liverpool on a regular basis is exactly how much of the opposition energy Salah and Mane take up. And for a while, that was just Salah. And then there was a period where people were trying to stop Salah by stopping Firmino. So Liverpool sort of dealt with that in a way. And what's happened in the meantime is Sadio Mane's become as prolific as anybody else in the team and almost anybody else in the division. So then you've got to stop Mane as well. And what that means is that obviously you've only got so many footballers and there's more room to work in. And I think one of the things that's really benefited Jota is he's been a bit of an unknown quantity. In a Liverpool shirt, not full stop, but in a Liverpool shirt. So I think, for instance, Atalanta have got a clear plan. They were following Sadio Mane everywhere. And whilst they're doing that, Diego Jota's banging a hat-trick. And that is something which I think can happen for sides. And I think it's getting the benefit out of that. It's been interesting. It's worth pointing out the flip side of that now is in the last nine, I think between them, Mane and Salah have only got two from open play in the last nine games, all comps. From a Liverpool point of view. So they're not quite firing as they were. Jota's been important in that. And actually, one of the things that has happened, I think, is that Jota being in the squad, but also when he's on the pitch at the same time, I feel as though he's got a bit more out of Firmino. And I see Liverpool, see that four now as, you know, I don't think Jota has come in to replace Firmino per se. I think that there's a massive part, especially for this season, of a bit of rotation. But I do think it could be any three that plays at the weekend. And I think it could be any three that plays in the meaningful games that we've got now moving forward. And I think that's a huge compliment, frankly, to Jota. And I think it's exactly what Liverpool wanted, because I think that they felt they couldn't ask those three just to keep absolutely pounding themselves. Now, the flip side of that is that, you know, we took Salah off at the weekend against Brighton and he was absolutely furious because he wants to be on the pitch. He wants to play. But that's what I think you'll see from Liverpool. And that's, as I say, it's testament to that player. I think he's been terrific. But I think that it will be three from four pretty regularly from here on in.
I think what I sort of found interesting was that I had a quick sort of flick through of the Liverpool squad. And in a way, I was sort of surprised that Divock Origi's still sort of there. In a way, I thought he sort of quietly sort of, it sounds really bad when I say, I thought he just moved to like Besiktas. As you know, where all sort of players like that go. And, you know, I guess Jota might not necessarily replacing sort of Firmino, if you know, sort of almost like last season, I'll say, which those, you know, those three are your starters, unless something happens. And I think Jota coming in, he plays well, you know, played predominantly off the left for Wolves and did well playing as a two. And he's sort of doing almost an in between part of that. And don't get me wrong, the amount of space and chances that Liverpool create, it makes Jota's life a hell of a lot easier. But I guess it sort of signalling out for someone like Divock Origi kind of going forward then, because he's not kind of getting any younger, I guess.
No, I think Divock will move on next summer, but then I've been saying that for two or possibly three consecutive summers now. But I think he's a footballer where Liverpool are very clear on what the value of him is, and they want to have him around. I think the manager likes to have the option of Origi either from the start or from the bench in games, because, you know, he's 6'4", he puts himself about, he's very, very quick. So he offers something really you know, something really straightforward that football teams need. He's good in front of goal. He's really calm in one-on-one situations and sticks it into the back of the net. He just can't play Liverpool's fast-flowing football outside of the penalty area. And that's a bit of a shortcoming, whereas obviously Jota can. To an extent, Minamino can, but he's not as imposing as Origi. Shaqiri hung on this season as well, and that's been a massive positive, I think, from a Liverpool point of view. You know, when we've got him on the pitch, Shaqiri's looked good. I think there'll always be questions around his injury record, and we ended up having to send a very good young prospect out on loan because of the players, the senior players we still had in the squad, and Harvey Ellis, who's gone to Blackburn and done well. So I expect Liverpool next summer for there to be a little bit of an exodus, to be honest with you. I think it would be strange if Shaqiri did another year, if we are back to relative post-COVID normality. It'd be strange if Origi did another year, and there'll be a decision to be made on Takumi Minamino in terms of what he does over the course of this season. But Liverpool will still have the three and Jota to work with.
Yeah, I think that's vitally important. And I know we've kind of covered the injury, so to speak, in terms of who's out, because you know, it's an extensive list, but how have you found sort of some of the young players who have come in? Because, you know, there's a bit of a conveyor belt at Liverpool at the moment of good players who are coming in. You know, Curtis Jones, I've seen sort of a couple of times now, and he seems to have really sort of stood out. You've got Nico Williams as well. And again, sort of Harvey Elliott came from Fulham. I know he's sort of been bounced around on loan now. But you know, there's been a few players who have got big moves elsewhere. Which, again, I think the recruitment of both sides of what Liverpool's doing, you know, it's crazy in terms of the fees. But how have you found sort of those players who have kind of stepped up to the mark the last couple of weeks?
You know, just to put it in context, you know, Elliott's played 9 times for Blackburn. He's got 1 goal and 3 assists, and he's only 17. He's getting a game every week as well for them. So he's doing well, it's fair to say. And that's really pleasing, to be honest with you. Him to one side. Jones is now, for me, in that moment that happens with us all, for me, I know we were doing this thing, which I'm sure Wolves supporters have done. I'm really impressed with his maturity. There was a lot of that going on. I'm now so impressed with his maturity, I'm not going to talk about his maturity anymore. He's just a first-team player now for Liverpool, and that's it. There's no sort of when will he become a first-team player. He is just now a member of that first-team squad. I'd argue we missed him when he didn't start against Brighton. He was very good last night against Ajax, and he is just in there. He wears number 17. He is, you know, effectively in the sort of in your football manager sort of style movements of players. For me, he's now just in the squad rotation system. He's no longer a hot prospect for the future. That's the sort of journey that, in my mind, he's now gone on. So he's obviously done ever so well. I've mentioned Elliott. I think Williams looks like a young player in the way in which Jones doesn't. That isn't to criticise him. I think he'll be absolutely fine as a squad fullback for Liverpool over a period of time. I think obviously there's onus on him right now to play and to be able to be part of the squad of the first team setup. Hopefully he can do that and can hold that down this season and then get a bit more time next season. But one of the issues he has is he gets compared with Trent Alexander-Arnold, who we sort of now forget is a young player, even though he's only 21, 22. And the idea is that Nico's meant to come in and be the new Trent, and that's just unreasonable. Trent Alexander-Arnold's one of the best players in Europe. So, you know, Nico was doing all right. Nat Phillips has got a bit of a run. He's 23. I don't think he'll start at the weekend, but he's got a couple of games for the first time at centre-back. I think he's, you know, he's not one for the future, really. I suspect he nearly moved on in the summer. And I think he will probably move on at the end of this season. But right now, with Liverpool centre-back options, you can get something out of Phillips. He's very good at heading it away. And in the Premier League, sometimes that's just what you need. He was excellent against West Ham when we beat them. And then the other younger defender who's got himself sometimes, a lad called Reece Williams, who was a Kidderminster last season. And he looks bright. He's done well in the Champions League. And I suspect, had Jimenez not had the awful accident, then I suspect that Liverpool, if they weren't going to go for Fabinho and Matip, which I do think they will, but if they weren't, they'd have been contemplating going for Phillips ahead of Williams, older, better in the air. I suspect, given the fact that Wolves' forward line is likely to be one full of pace, if they had to pick between Reece Williams and Nat Phillips, they would pick Reece Williams now for this one, given the fact that they won't be coming up against the physicality and the ability to dominate centre-halves that you get from Jimenez. But I think Liverpool will start with Matip and Fabinho, and I think Liverpool will pick the strongest side they possibly can. against Wolverhampton Wanderers. They will take Wolves absolutely deadly seriously. And one of the reasons why I actually think we've done well against Wolves since they've got into the Premier League is Liverpool are very good at showing the right opponents the right amount of respect, and Liverpool have shown Wolves an unbelievable amount of respect every single time we played them.
No, I completely agree. I mean, we'll come on to the game at weekend in a couple of minutes after a break, but it's almost been really frustrating that, especially last season, the games against Liverpool, because they were quite close affairs. I think it was only sort of, I think, you know, 1-0 or 2-0 or 2-1 defeats. And I looked at it, you know, you can be frustrated, but we lost to a better team, and you could see Wolves gave their all and Liverpool gave their all, and you go, well, what do we need to do to win? Because especially the game at Molineux, it was so frustrating. It's like, we deserve to get something out of it.
Yeah.
But we lost to a better team. And, you know, there's no... It's so hard to justify sometimes as a fan, isn't it? When you kind of go toe-to-toe against a better team. And, you know, it's not like Wolves... I think it's always been interesting to say the amount of respect sort of both teams have played. And, you know, Wolves are quite a defensive-minded team. But actually, you know, when they need to push on and, you know, pull the trigger, they will do. But we'll go through the... bit of a preview on the Liverpool game right after this.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com. Please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing-wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
So, on Sunday, Wolves will be at Anfield for the 7:15 kickoff. It'll be the first time since March that fans have actually been allowed in the stadium. With sort of where Liverpool sits in the wonderful tiered rankings. How do you think the atmosphere will kind of differ? Because it's not a huge amount of fans in what is quite a big stadium. I almost feel like the percentage-wise, it's almost better just to have zero in a way.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very, very strange. We'll see what we end up with, frankly, in terms of the atmosphere. I think the tickets have been done through a lottery basis. I haven't got one. So, and that's fine, by the way. That made me sound like I was quite grumpy about it. I'm not. there is a thing with it where I think it'll be strange, and I think it might... I don't think it'll be necessarily a uniform good. And what I mean by that is I don't think all the sides that have got fans back in the stadium will do better. And I also don't think necessarily... player by player, I think it'll have a different emotional reaction. I don't think it'll be as straightforward as everyone who's got fans in is going to have a bit of an advantage. I think it'll take a bit of getting used to, because these footballers have been in these empty stadia for God knows how long. And I think it will ultimately be, I've watched a couple of Liverpool women's matches from the press box during lockdown, and I would describe the whole experience as really a bit weird. And I think that it will be really a bit weird on Sunday. I think it will be, you know, it'll be good for there to be some degree of that sort of emotional push and pull for players. But I think that that'll work on both sides. You know, one of the things that some footballers love to find themselves against is away supporters, or is the oppositional supporters. So I don't think it's, you know, I don't want to talk really about the advantageous thing. I just think it's going to be odd. And I think it's going to be odd for us as viewers as well. And, you know, but hopefully, and let's remember this, what we all want is... we all want to be back in stadia as soon as possible, and for those stadia to be full. And between that, the vaccine news that's come through this morning, between this today, you know, these are baby steps towards what we eventually want. And with a bit of luck, by March, we could be, you know, maybe, I'm not entirely sure right now when the return fixture is. But let me be absolutely crystal clear. I would, you know, be overjoyed to shoot along to Molyneux for the second half of the season. And there'll be some people who make some noises at that stage about whether or not there's been an advantage. But, you know, whether or not Wolves get an advantage because the game in the second half of the season's at Molyneux and the first half of the season's at Anfield, I honestly don't care. I'll have a great time in Molyneux. I've always had a great time in Molyneux. It'll be brilliant. I'd quite like you to find a way to get us all in one stand so we can be a bit closer together without it running all the way along
really
the length.
Really stretched out, yeah.
Yeah, without that. But apart from that, you know, as I say, I'll take... You know, if you offer me now Saturday the 13th of March, Wolverhampton Wanderers away, it'll be a full ground and it'll be the first full ground. I would absolutely bite your hand off as long as I was able to get an away ticket and be in that Liverpool end.
I think that's it. And, you know, I found it interesting, you know, absorbing games sort of on TV, which we can't do a lot. And, you know, understand feeling the atmosphere. And it's different because... You know, say I'm a season ticket holder. I'm used to going to games week in, week out. But I'm particularly for Liverpool, actually, you know, you're in a minority if you're actually going to watch games physically. And it's really hard for fans who get to go to games consistently to then just stop completely and having to watch it all from home. We've kind of got used to it now. And it is going to be staggered. We all know it's not going to be a flick of a light switch of a... you know, we're going to be able to get 30,000 in at Molyneux in the new year, even when the sort of, you know, the tiers do change. But, you know, vaccine news is sort of really hopeful, actually, that they say we can kind of move these things forward because it's not just, let's say, Wolves and Liverpool. It's the teams beneath us
who are
the ones who, almost, you know, Wolves and Liverpool will be fine, you know, with our many kind of commercial partners kind of going forward.
Of course.
It'll kind of supply it. But, you know, say we're down the road from the likes of Warsaw, who are probably, you know, the ones who are crying out to get those fans in the stadium a bit more, aren't they?
That's absolutely true, but I think there's an emotional thing as well. You know, genuinely, and I'm not asking for, you know, I'm not asking for pity here, but I haven't got to acclaim the champions yet. Like, yeah. There hasn't been a point where we've got to call the champions as a collective. And we waited 30 years for that, and we still haven't got to do it yet. We haven't had the parade and all of that sort of stuff. So I want Liverpool to be as close to the top as possible when we all get back in, and I want that to be a genuinely sort of emotional moment. And exactly the same way that, you know, one of the things I always think, Wolves are a good example, Rich, you know, you've watched a lot of rubbish Wolves teams throughout your time.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, there were some seasons where we would have been all right not to be in the ground, both Liverpool and Wolves, whereas, you know, there is this sort of... Right now, this is a Wolves team that's worthy of acclaim. That's where Molyneux needs to be full, and it needs to have those people, and it needs those people to be saying to this Wolves team, you're a great Wolves team, and you're a pleasure to watch. So I think that I think you are right to point out the sort of the financial realities for lower division sides, and I'm all over them getting as much support as humanly possible. And obviously people back in the ground will help them. But for me, the thing that I think we all need, both players and supporters, is that sort of emotional bond to be rekindled. And for us to sort of to get that moment of, you know, be able to say we're genuinely proud of you, because they've persevered through this. And yes, it is just playing football in one sense, but they've persevered through this. And right now, you know, you've only got to look at the league table before our game at the weekend. And, you know, you're looking at a Wolves side that could well be banging the conversation for top four. And if you're banging the conversation for top four, let's have a look after 20 games. It might be that if you're in it after 20 games for top four, you could this season be in it for top one. And I think that that's something which, you know, imagine Molyneux in the spring when people are allowed back in, and Wolves find themselves sitting in fourth, 2 points ahead of fifth and 6 points behind first, and exactly how that would feel for Wolverhampton Wanderers supporters. It would be, you know, it'd be an absolute boost, and you'd want to carry those lads home for the remainder of the season.
I think you bang on the money with it all, to be honest. And you're right that it's a communal feeling, isn't it, being a fan? Yeah. And that's it, you know. It's very odd that, you know, the person who I go to sit with for season tickets is then all of a sudden we've had to very much change the dynamics in our relationship.
Yeah.
From one way, say, there's a point where we just couldn't talk about football. It wasn't happening. So.
Yeah.
Well, hang on, we've got to talk about other stuff now. This is interesting. But let's say, as I mentioned when I was on your show last week, that you can pretty much predict the Wolves starting lineup and how they are what formation they're going to play. I guess from Sunday, quite a few things have changed, but Wolves lined up with a 4-2-3-1. And of course, the Jimenez injury sort of really kind of made a bit of dent into sort of, I guess, Wolves' sort of tactics going forward. So it's going to be interesting to sort of see how Wolves line up, whether we can't go back to a back three, which, you know, hasn't quite been firing on all cylinders, or whether we feel that we need it to protect Wolves from the, I guess, non-start of the Liverpool kind of attacking game. I guess sort of my question to you is, I mean, Wolves did sort of really well against Arsenal. We kind of put them sword to them, particularly in the first half with, you know, this three behind a striker of Neto, Podence and Traore. I'm always keen to sort of hear this from opposition fans. I'm interested to sort of hear your thoughts, it's always about other Wolves players, but your thoughts on Traore, because he was someone who was very tentatively linked with Liverpool over the summer.
I think he's just obviously so difficult to deal with when he's absolutely on it. You know, I think he's... What I think is underrated with him, I think a lot of people view Traore's best work from afar as this idea he picks it up and he drives 40 yards. And where I actually think he's at his most unplayable is when he drives 10. So it's when he's around the penalty area and he's just able to stand his man up and just get past him. In a way that he can keep the ball far enough away so it can never be reached, and he's able to keep it under control and surge forward. I think the stuff when he carries it 40 yards looks great and is obviously hugely beneficial to Wolves. But why I think Liverpool were looking at him was, you know, we play a lot of games of football against sides that sit pretty deep. And I think, you know, I legitimately do think Liverpool might well have been looking at him. And I think that what they would be looking at is, what does it look like if you've got a footballer who, when they sit deep, is able to, over and over again, beat his man on the outside? What does that look like when that happens? And I think that's sort of the trajectory for Traore. And I think it's part of what will be in Nuno's head as he's thinking about this change of shape. Because I think a lot of sides had sort of decided that the way home against Wolves was just to be utterly frustrating. And to say, you make the play, you do it. We'll react to you. Whereas I think a lot when Wolves first come up, people aren't prepared for them. And certainly for the first half of that first season, but I'd say even longer, people had the idea of, well, we'll make the play against them. And then all of a sudden Wolves had hurt them. So I think that that's part of what Liverpool were looking at. And that's what I find most concerning about Traore is, what does it look like when he's around the edge of the box? And I think that's where he could hurt Liverpool this weekend. I think it's where he's hurt us in the past. I think Robertson had a torrid time with him second half at Molineux back in January. I thought he had a really, really torrid time. And he said as much afterwards, Robertson, you know, and I think at times he was looking around for a bit of help and it wasn't quite as forthcoming as he might have liked. So not least because that day Sadio Mane went off injured. So I think Liverpool will be conscious of him. I think for me, the key question is, Liverpool cannot predict this Wolves lineup. I think there's every chance Wolves go back to three at the back, absent of Jimenez, play in Liverpool and think, let's just see where we are after an hour. There's every chance Wolves play 4-2-3-1 and go at Liverpool really, really dynamic. There's every chance it becomes more of a 4-3-3. And I think that from a Liverpool point of view, 2 months ago, the thing they would have said was, well, we know what Wolves are going to do.
Yeah,
and right now, exactly. That's completely gone. We've got no sense of what Wolves are going to do before this game on Sunday, none whatsoever.
I was going to say, like, for me, and I watch sort of a lot of American football, you know, they talk about game plans a lot. And I wouldn't say it's easy to game plan against Wolves because we are a very good team and they can do a couple of little things very subtly to shift it. But now we've almost got two different plans in terms of how we line up. And it's pretty much worked successfully in the last two games. We got a draw against Southampton playing four at the back without Connor Cody for the first time in a thousand years, and then we beat Arsenal, who've not beat away from home in 39 years or something crazy, and again we fought for back and go, well, we know we can do both systems, we know we can give Liverpool a good game when we're on form. And I think it's a really interesting chess match, especially with, I say, the injuries that's impacting Liverpool. How will that change how they play compared to, I guess, the injuries to Wolves and how that will make them play as well? So I think it's both teams. It's going to be a real kind of, you know, standoff, I guess, between, you know, do Liverpool really try and push forward and, you know, try and stretch Wolves, especially if they're playing for the back for, you know, again, appreciate sort of only a third game. But knowing that there are probably weaknesses at the back without Van Dijk, without Gomez, without Alisson as well. I think it's going to be a really interesting sort of tactical duel.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think it's going to be a really good game of football, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be tense. I genuinely do feel our next two home games, so we've got Wolves and then we've got Tottenham in the midweek game in a couple of weeks. And we've got this unbelievably impressive unbeaten run at home. And I do think it's the most at threat in the next two games, as it will be across, arguably, I think if we get through those two games unscathed, I think we'll end the season still unbeaten at home. That run will continue. But I do believe that the Wolves game and the Tottenham game, both of them with the current injury crisis that we've got, but also in general, the nature of the sort of sides Wolves and Tottenham are, they're more than capable of getting results against Liverpool at full strength. I've seen enough to be able to say that. And so I'm of the view it'll be such a difficult game, and it wouldn't surprise me if aspects of it are a little cagey. The one thing that's to our advantage that we haven't had for a while is we've actually got a decent rest running into it, and we're not that bothered by the game that follows because we're through now on top of the group in Europe. So I think that frees Liverpool up a little bit to be able to commit to 90 minutes of football in a way that they haven't been able to in any game across the last few weeks. So I think that's a good thing from a Liverpool point of view. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool pick the team they pick against Wolves, and then there's 11 changes for the game in Europe the following midweek. So I think that and a lot of the players don't even travel. So I think a lot of that is a real possibility for Liverpool. I think he'll end up doing something along the lines of, I think it will be Kelleher in goal, just. I think he might have thought a little differently had Jimenez been fit. Again, the idea of a goalkeeper who needs to be more dealing with crosses, so he might have gone with Adrian. But presuming there's no Becker, I think it will be Kelleher in goal. I think he'll go, obviously, Robertson left back. I think there'll be part of him that will want to play Fabinho in the heart of the midfield. But I think he'll ultimately decide he'll go Matip and Fabinho as his best centre-back partnership that he's currently got available. He'll go Henderson, Wijnaldum, and I think Curtis Jones will play again in the middle of the park. So I think he'll go with that midfield three. And then I actually don't think Jota will start for all the talk. I think he'll go Salah, Mane and Firmino for this one. And he'll be pleased to have the sub. And Jota will definitely come on 60. And it'll be for any of the front three or for a midfielder. But I think he'll be pleased to have the sub for this one. That's what I think. I mean, it's difficult to predict Klopp at the minute. And I think it'll be Nico Williams at right back. And I think that'll prove to be the area that Wolves look to target. But I do think he will just about start Williams at right back unless he can get Milner fit. I think if Milner is fit enough to start, he will start right back from a Liverpool point of view.
I mean, I think if you've got an injury crisis, I'd almost start Milner almost whatever because of his versatility, what he brings, and, if a phrase can do a job, there's probably not many players who can do a job to his level across, five areas of a football pitch. And, what he brings to a team, I love James Milner as a player and have done for, basically about 15 years now. But I think one thing we can definitely be certain of, whether Jota starts or comes off the bench, is that, football cliches will dictate he will score against Wolves because it's what happens, doesn't it? Whether he does a non-celebration will be up for grabs, I guess, though. In terms of sort of a Wolves team from yourself, who are you sort of interested to kind of keep your eye on, especially, I guess, without Jimenez sort of being there? I know we've spoken about him before and, he's a lights-out, proper number nine striker, but without him, sort of who kind of stands out for yourself?
There's very few Wolves players I'm not genuinely interested in, and that's not me just sort of playing for time. I'm interested to see how Bowley goes in a back four. If we're going to get to see that this week, I'm very, very interested in that. That is one where I'd like to see sort of what it looks like for him and how he enjoys it. And I think the same can be said to an extent around Cody as well. I think they end up being put under a lot of pressure, these footballers. And I think that they may well be able to find a way through. But if it is a back four, I would feel as though there's the possibility they could find themselves a little exposed. I'm intrigued to see how Markel gets on. I think Semedo is a very good player. Markel comes from Lyon with an ability to play left-hand-sided centre-half, back left-back or left-hand-sided wing-back. I think he looks like he could be a really promising addition for this Wolves side. And then in the middle of the park, I was especially impressed with Moutinho last 20 minutes against Southampton. It felt like to me he found an extra gear for the first time in a while whenever I've caught them. He began to look his age a tiny little bit, and it was almost like he thought, no, I've had enough of this. Absolutely had enough of this. Watch me go. And I was really impressed with him there. And I think if he can be the driving force that Wolves sort of need him to be, then I think we're talking about a Wolves side that's more than capable of still being there or thereabouts in the next phase with Moutinho as well, is that his set pieces are the absolute business.
Yeah, I think with Moutinho, I mean, my kind of pre-season prediction is he'd be phased out of the starting lineup by the end of the season. And that's sort of partly because of his form at the back end of last season, combined with the form of Neves as well. And there's always been a bit of a master and the apprentice with both of them in a way, yeah. But they can just about play together, but it doesn't quite, they have relatively similar styles and sit in the same areas of the pitch. But against Southampton, again, he had a good game, and there was just that point in the second half where it was that little bit of movement, that direct forward pass to kind of help create the goal that we missed, that we've been missing, to be honest, and that sort of assertiveness. And then against Arsenal, it was back to his best in terms of the way he can kind of conduct himself on the pitch. You know, for someone who's 5'7", he doesn't miss a ball in the air, and it's because he just knows his way around a football pitch and knows exactly what he's doing and what he brings to a team. It's something else, in my opinion. But I guess we'll wrap it up there. But before we go, let's have a score prediction.
I feel genuinely as though all three outcomes in the football match are almost 33% each, and it's been a long time since I thought that going into a game at Anfield, but I think we are relatively close to that, to be honest with you. I will just err on the side of Liverpool to squeak it 2-1, and for you all on the Fancast to be just yet again ruining that the opportunity was there and you weren't quite able to take it. A game that flows like the one in Molineux in January, where Liverpool get an early goal, start relatively strong, Wolves come into a big-time second half, and Liverpool either hang on for dear life or nick one, genuinely wouldn't surprise me. And I think Liverpool are in for 90 minutes of sheer hell on Sunday against Wolves, but I think they can just get the result.
No, I think that's sort of a fair and honest assessment, to be fair. And I think, I've been doing a fan cast for about 5-6 odd years now. I don't think I've ever predicted us to lose, and I won't do on this one. So I'm going to go...
Never.
Exactly. I'm going to go for an optimistic 1-1 draw for sort of, again, same reasons that I think I said before. I can never sort of really see Wolves losing under Nuno because we can just sort of really turn it on defensively. But whether we'll have that extra gear, especially without Jimenez, that extra clinical nature that he can just bring a goal out of nothing. It might be a real breakthrough moment for Fabio Silva, who, again, he's only 18, 19. He came for a lot of money, but he did really well against Arsenal. Whether he can, again, a bit of an unknown quantity against, different opposition, see what he does. But we'll wrap it up there. Neil, thank you very much for joining us this week, and hopefully we'll get to catch up after the game on Sunday.
Excellent stuff.
And that's a wrap on today's show. Big thanks once again to Neil from the Anfield Wrap for joining us. And big thanks, as always, to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. For any of your website needs or marketing needs, feel free to check them out on pixelyetimedia.com. To keep up with all things Wolves and Wolves Fancast, go over to our social media pages. We are running throughout December our Fancast Advent, where we're doing a guest for player each day. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel. We've got some great videos up and running at the moment, from Gully's tactical analysis to Dan's FIFA greet, as well as post-match reactions from fans. Great to have you all join us once again, and we look forward to catching you after the Liverpool game.